This is the 007 Debriefings. I'm Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapon Specialist Zero.
Zero. How you doing this week?
Doing all right.
That's good. All right, so we are here to comb the files of MI6 to talk about the cinematic adventures of one James Bond. This week, The Spy Who Loved Me. Why don't we get into our mission objectives? We go through a bunch of different elements of the movie that pertain to Bond. And we're going to start with 007, who is James Bond, played by Roger Moore. He keeps improving after each iteration. He seems a little more threatening. The danger element seems to go up a little more as each iteration comes by. But his strengths are his charm, his wit, and his comedic savvy, I would say, in this movie. I do think he's improved, and technically that is true. But I think this wasn't a Bond movie that I think Moore was better suited for.
This movie was a bit light on gadgets and everything. It seemed like this one, Moore was okay. I mean, definitely better than the last movie, because I think it felt like he was starting to get settled out in his role as Bond and everything. But there's a little bit more sort of like spy-focused stuff rather than just heavy, heavy brute force action and things like that. He's definitely got to work the charm a little bit more with being a spy and everything. I think he's fine in this one. I think that's just how I kind of feel. He's not exceptional, but he's fine.
I agree on a lot of points that you have. I think he is fine for what he is when you compare him to the other two movies that he's done. His charm works. I think that in that case, he works as Bond. The issue that I have is still, I don't see the dangerousness of Bond from Connery. I don't see the elements of surprise, just how deadly that Bond is as Connery. And this is where I think this film has a problem with Moore's interpretation of Bond. Because I really think this film specifically would have benefited if this was a Connery movie. If this was Connery who's playing the role. Because you have this Bond who has to be much more of a threat. Who has to be much more of a dangerous person. Much more deadly. And Moore is not good at that, really. He's fine, but not as good as Connery was. And then you have the back and forth with Anya in this movie that I think would have done much better if it was Barbara Bach and Connery having the back and forth.
I definitely agree, just in those two cases, just he lacks sort of the brutality of Connery, and then just the back and forth between him and Anya, it isn't as clever or as playful as Connery in some cases, so he seems to fall a bit short.
Mm. And I think that what happens with Anya in this movie and how clever she is would have made her, I think, a much better, not even just much better character, but a much more interesting and intimidating character if she was able to best Connery. And the problem that I have with it being Moore is that it just seemed a little too easy. It seemed a little too like, well, yeah, this is Moore. So if this was Connery, this would have never happened. But since it's Moore, he's a little goofier. He's a little more, I guess, effeminate. He's a little more less masculine than Connery is. The way Anya is seems to be slightly neutered because of that. But if it was Connery and she was able to do everything, then you have a very captivating character in that instance. But we'll get into Anya when that time comes. I do like Moore as Bond. I like how he is in this, but I just think with the way that they were doing this story, it was the wrong Bond for this. This would have been better as a Connery Bond than it would have been as a Moore Bond.
Yeah, I agree. Just Moore's fine in this one.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It's one of those things that he could have used a little bit of the roughness, I guess, is the way I can think of it, that he could have used a little bit of the roughness of Sean Connery. Since it's not there, it leaves a little bit to be desired. It's just like, you could have been a little bit sharper here, a little bit more rougher here, and it's just not there.
There's a lack of unpredictability with Moore, which works well when you're making a film that is much more comedic in nature and much more of a film that where you have to rely on the charm of the character more than the rugged individuality and the roughness of Connery's Bond. But when it comes to points where he has to act like that, I think it leaves a much to be desired in that end. So I'm with you. I do like Moore. I think Moore is fine in this movie. This was really meant to be something for Connery more than I would say Roger Moore in this one. So let's get on to villains. There are two villains in this film, but like From Russia with Love, the henchman takes the most screen time, I would say. And this leads to an issue that has been much more prevalent with Bond girls, and I would say with the villains. And that is that both villains don't have a lot of screen time to be that captivating or compelling. So let's start with the main villain, which is Carl Sigmund Stromberg, who is played by Kurt Jurgens. My main issue with Stromberg is he's not really in this movie that much. And on top of that, he's just a less effective mix of three different villains, which is Dr. No, Goldfinger, and Colonel Klebb. And again, the main issue that I have is he's not in it that much. And when he is in it, I think you mentioned it in the beginning, he's more like a cartoonish supervillain. And then when he gets dispatched, it's kind of anticlimactic.
You see him kind of in the beginning, kind of setting up like he's got the perfect plan and everything. And then you see him kill one of the conspirators that had betrayed him and leaked information out. And you're just like, okay, wow. Yeah, this guy's like mad scientist with crazy high-tech evil mastermind lair. And then, boom, just gone. You see references to him mentioned by other characters here and there. And then nothing until almost, I want to say, the half point of the movie. And then that's when Bond and Anya just start kind of heading to his base under the guise of being scientists to try to see what the base looks like and try to gather intel. And you see Bond meet up with Stromberg there for a moment, and then you don't see him again until the end. And that's when it's just like, all right, so here we are. I'm here. I'm setting my evil megalomaniac plan in motion, and here we go. And that's it. The overall impression you get of him of he's just kind of a mad scientist megalomaniac type who just wants to blow up the world and start new underwater cities where he's the tyrant king. I guess we're going the cartoonish supervillain angle with this guy, and that's about it. And that's kind of the overall impression I got, again, just seeing Stromberg being the villain this time.
He's pretty flat in this, and I think it's more to do with how little he's in it, and then what we see of it is just basic boilerplate supervillainy. And in some films that could work, but I think with this specific film, it kind of left a little to be desired. So let's get into the other villain, which is the henchman Jaws, played by Richard Kiel. Man, Jaws is weird. I don't know about you, but like, I find this really strange. He's armed with steel teeth, he has superhuman strength, and a tall frame, which of course is Richard Kiel. He's a very tall man. And it's easy to see why he is one of the more memorable villains of the Bond films, but he's also the silliest. He really is incredibly silly. What does he do? He walks slowly, almost robotically, and he does it to his prey where he pins his target down with his brute strength, fighting off bullets, punches, and falling debris. Literally unstoppable. Someone to be really feared. And how does he kill them? By biting them. By biting them. It's incredibly strange in this movie. It really dissipates the fear that you would have in this guy, because you would think that if he could just break you in fucking half, you'd be like, oh my god, that's fucking scary. But when he just slowly tries to arch his way into Bond or anybody else to bite them, it just comes off as odd and weird.
Jaws is the character, I think, that really sort of brings sort of the wacky cartoonish supervillainy into high gear. When he shows up, it's like you said, he's kind of like a lumbering giant. You're just like, oh, he's fucking slow, whatever. And then you'll see whoever his victims are, they'll freak the fuck out, they'll start running for the hills. When he gets shot at, it just seems like just nothing can stop him. He's just sort of a Titanic-sized killing machine. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the scenes where he just pins down his target and he goes in to just bite the vein on the neck open and just cause him to bleed all over, they play like the silly like killing theme when that happens. And this is where it kind of gets into cartoonish. That vein's got a lot of fucking pressure.
Yeah.
So for him to bite it and then come out clean shirt and no mess, it's just kind of like, yeah, I don't think that's how that worked. And kind of even further getting into the goofiness of this, the victims that do succumb to this bite attack, they've got just, you know, little splotch of blood on like their jacket or whatever clothes they've got. Just like, no, if he were to bite them on that vein on the neck, there would be blood fucking everywhere.
Yeah. if you are the type of person who likes the Bond movies to be silly and a little less serious, this might not be an issue for you. I want to say that right off the rip. But I also want to point out another thing too, Zero. In Goldfinger, you really like the henchman of Oddjob. Technically, Oddjob is a bit of the same thing. Superhuman strength, doesn't talk, kind of strange and weird. But you liked Oddjob. What is the difference between Oddjob and Jaws, where you like Oddjob, but you don't like Jaws so much?
I think with Oddjob, it's just more that he just comes off as a strong man.
Okay.
And he's sort of like the strong man henchman, whereas Jaws, you've got a guy with, like, fucking metal teeth, mm-hmm. and he starts off so imposing, and then the way that he gets to the kill is just sort of goofy. That's where I take a little bit of issue with Jaws. Don't get me wrong, I mean, the imposing moments, oh, good lord, he's imposing, especially yeah. since the actor who plays him is really fucking tall. Richard Kiel, he's really fucking tall. I think he's almost like 7 foot something.
I think it was 7 foot two is what his height was.
Yes, 7 foot three and 7 foot two is what I'm seeing. But just, he's really fucking tall. And you see this henchman, super imposing, super tall, metal teeth, kind of an imposing sight. The way he goes about his killing, it's kind of goofy. It would have been a little bit more imposing if he was just sort of savage and just started, like, going full-on cannibal on his victims. But he kind of takes the assassin path. And by taking the assassin path, it's just kind of goofy.
When it comes to villains, this film is pretty disappointing. You just have two villains that are lacking in some key area to make them very compelling. I think with Stromberg, it's the fact that you don't see him too much and that he's pretty much standard stock supervillain. And with Jaws, I think the way he kills, and the fact that he doesn't talk at all. You just have two disappointing villains as a result that aren't that interesting when they're on screen. Except for maybe the first part where you see Jaws. And that's about it. So let's get into Bond Girl, which is Anya Amosova, Agent Triple X, played by Barbara Bach. Okay, I have one problem with Anya in this. And that is that her call sign is Agent Triple X. That just sounded so damn silly to me. Really? You couldn't be a little more clever than that? Why not just age at 69? Why not? Well, just go ham. Go ham with that.
Yeah, when her call sign was mentioned, I was just like, oh, God. You guys could have been creative. I mean, you know, Bond's 007. You could have gone with Agent 69. Come on, guys.
To be fair, Agent 69 would be a bad one, too. With that being said, when she's introduced that way, it kind of leaves like, oh, really? But that is the only problem I have with this character. I think she is easily the best Bond girl thus far. She is much of an equal to Bond as Pussy Galore was, while still being incredibly gorgeous and an engaging character. The problem with Pussy Galore in Goldfinger is that she just snapped right out of it at a certain point in the movie. Like, she just changed character 180. That didn't necessarily happen with Anya. She does bend a little, but she still remains the same character. And because she's also a secret agent herself, she's an equal to Bond. And she also best Bond in a number of ways that is not ridiculous, it is not corny, it actually works really well. She actually knows what makes Bond tick, what he does right and wrong, so she utilizes it in a brilliant way.
Anya is definitely by far one of the stronger Bond girls we've seen thus far. Really, it's like you said, just she can pull just the same punches as Bond and even gets one over him a few times too. And it's actually kind of refreshing to see, especially we've joked a few times now that there have been sort of magic penis moments with Bond where just you've got just a Bond girl who will start off strong and then just magic penis happens and then bam, oh my God, I'm the most helpless thing in the world, or I was working for the other side, but I've been convinced your side is the best side. And this one, just the back and forth is just so good to see. And I don't really think the magic penis shenanigans really worked this time around.
No, in fact, when she finds out what Bond did in the beginning of the movie, it flips back into like, oh, I'm going to kill you after this is done. Like, that was different enough. Here's the thing, though. She's more Connery than Moore in this movie because she is dangerous and unpredictable in the way Connery is, which is fascinating, which is why one of the big reasons why I think this could have been better as a Connery film. film, because you have two characters that have the same mentality and do the same things, but yet are two different people. That would have been an interesting way to make things work in that movie. But that's not Anya's fault, or that's really not Barbara Bach's fault, too. Barbara Bach is really good in this movie. I don't know if you mentioned it, but like in the action sequences, she's utterly believable. Like, I can believe that when she throws a punch, she fucking hurts. When she hits the person that towards the end of the movie, I didn't have a hard time believing it. I was like, oh yeah, she kicks ass. I get it. Like, on top of that too, utterly gorgeous, sexy, desirable, enticing, and yet dangerous and capable. She is the best Bond girl to me so far. I don't know how it's going to turn out with the others, but my favorite right now.
At the end, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of a struggle instead of just... just giving in to Bond's last final wish, because she gets into like cold-blooded executioner mode at the end of the movie.
I know, it was good too.
And just Bond's like, it is customary for a prisoner to have like their last request granted, and then that's kind of when magic penis shenanigans sort of happen. It's just like, damn it, there could have been an actual fight for a bit, maybe for them to wrestle around for a bit, and then, you know, maybe the charm gets turned on and she kind of falls for him at that point. Would have been a little bit more believable. That's just sort of my sort of creative difference on how the ending could have been.
But the only way for the magic penis thing to not be a thing is if she never gave in at all. Like, if you would have had, if you would have had the scene where he's like, well, darling, I guess it's time to, you know, comb the depths of Siberia. I don't know. I'm not that clever. And and she goes like, you're lucky I don't kill you, and then walks off. I guess that could have worked to a certain extent, but I don't know. Like, I'm of two ways. I understand what you're saying, and I kind of agree with you. It would have been a little bit better if she either teased him and rebuffed, or she just flat out said, nah, I don't think so. You killed my husband. Fuck you. I get what you're saying. You are right to a certain extent, but I'm not as bothered as I think I might have been with others, so...
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not a deal breaker. It's kind of one of those, this could have been scripted a little bit better to show that she's still pretty deadly serious. And yeah, you know, maybe after kind of wrestling around with each other, just maybe the charm gets turned on and she's like, you know, on second thought, yeah, I don't think there's a need to kill you. Then they kind of, you know, have some more fun and then get caught by the British Navy doing the thing.
Yeah, it's always bad when the British Navy finds you.
Yeah.
Spy action. I'll put it this way. With the exception of the beginning ski scenes in the film, I think the action's pretty damn tight. Gunfights, vehicle scenes, spy sequences, all well done, and they get better as the new films come up. I think even fight scenes involving both Bond and Anya are very well done. With the exception of the fight scenes involving Jaws, which are just goofy as hell.
Overall, it's a further improvement on things. There are some green screen shenanigans going on with some of the vehicle scenes involving the Lotus, but they're definitely getting better. Mm-hmm. It's definitely blending a little bit better, but this one is yet another one where they focus a lot more on just practical effects, which is great to see. Mm-hmm. And the ski scene is a little bit goofy. You've got like backflips and stuff like that, and you're just like... Okay, we're showboating a bit. I get it.
Yeah. Just to correct you, we've had comments on this before, and I've said it on our comments. It's not a green screen, it's projection. I think it's called rear view projection. Okay. So I just want to, I know what you mean. I get what you're saying. I know you know it. But like, green screen and projection are usually two things that get mixed up. So it's projection.
That's
so
fair.
The ski sequences are kind of goofy. Here's the thing that I've noticed in this film, okay? Is that the action scenes seem to borrow very liberally from other Bond films. The ski sequences from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. We have the underwater sequences from Thunderball. The train sequence from Russia with Love. We also have the deadly henchmen that needed to be defeated using elements outside of bullets and fighting, which was in Goldfinger. The film seems to take in a lot of those elements and basically make it into its own movie with this. I don't think that's necessarily bad technically. It's just way too familiar.
I can definitely see the angle you're going with. It almost feels like a compilation of the greatest hits from some of the action sequences. Yeah. And I can definitely see that. And it's definitely not a bad thing, especially since some of the action sequences that it does sort of borrow from are really good action sequences. Mm. It definitely doesn't do anything to sort of push the needle forward or do anything grand and brand new. I think a great example would be the last movie where we had the amazing corkscrew jump, the one that was ruined the freaking slide whistle.
Oh God. Calm down. We get it. You don't like the slide whistle. I get it.
But yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, it's one of those things that this one sort of borrows action sequences from some of the previous movies and doesn't do anything sort of brand new. It is a bit of a shame, but at the same time, I don't quite think it's bad for doing that.
I will say one thing, though, that I think kind of doesn't work with the action at times. The music, pretty much described as 70s porn chic, and with the bomb, 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 bomb. Okay, wow, okay.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. Just the porn funk music for like the action sequences just felt a little out of place.
Yeah, it did. It's not terrible, but it's just like, that's a little odd. It's entertaining, the action sequences. I think the spy elements are pretty good too, but it's just not as exciting as it was in other films because they just borrow liberally from those.
Yeah, definitely agreed.
Okay. So let's get into our final element, which is theme song or opening credits, which is Nobody Does It Better, composed by Marvin Hamlisch and lyrics by Carol Bayer Seeger, performed by Carly Simon. Nobody Does It Better is a very sweet, sentimental song with good lyrics and has a lovely singing voice by Carly Simon. It's actually a really good song. I actually like the song a lot. And the opening credit sequence is also good. Lots of blues with both a male and female model acting as the background characters. I thought that was nice. Problem is they don't fit with the movie. I don't think that the song fits with the opening credits. I don't think the song fits with anything in the movie, to be absolutely honest with you, because whenever I hear the sting going on throughout the entire movie, it's like, this feels weird. I like the song and I like the opening credits. I just don't think they fit with the movie.
I have the same sentiment. I think just musically it's fantastic, but thematically it is just not a good fit.
Not all. But again, it's weird. I like both. I like both the opening credit sequence and I also like the song. But yeah, like in a Bond movie, if this had a lot more to do with the romance angle of the film, then I'd be like, oh, okay, I kind of understand. It's not much romance in this movie. There is a little bit, but it's not like overpowering the film. It's not like the big thing.
And thankfully, this is kind of a step up from the last movie's song, which was not really that great.
No, it was not. Okay, so conclusion time. Zero, why don't you go first? What is your conclusion for the film?
I think this is a mission accomplished. The best way that I can kind of sum this up is it is a little bit on the cartoonish side with like the mad scientist megalomaniac sort of villain, and then you've got Jaws being sort of this like super henchman that can just be impervious to everything and chooses to sort of bite into the veins of his victims and stuff like that, vampire style. But overall, just you've got fantastic action sequences, which kind of borrow inspiration from some of the previous movies, and then add into the fact that you've got a Bond girl who can go toe-to-toe with Bond and just sort of dish out the same punches he's proverbially serving up. I think it's a fantastic movie. Are there things that I think that could have been better? Maybe tune down the megalomaniac mad scientist cartoon angle, and maybe a better theme song that sort of ties into the title of the movie? Yeah, sure, but I don't think those are necessarily bad things. Some folks may find the cartoonish mad scientist supervillainy kind of fun, and
yeah.
I'm not gonna kind of, you know, just bag on somebody for liking that. I mean, it's a perfectly fine thing to like. I just think it's a little bit turned up to the 11 on the cartoonish mad scientist angle, but I mean, I think the later Bonds get a little bit better with sort of reining that stuff in.
I agree with your sentiment on like the fact that if you like the silliness aspect of the Bond films, that's good. That's cool. And I think that's one of the things about Bond that I didn't realize until we started going through them one by one, is that I thought there was just a set formula. You have your Bond, you have your Bond girl, you have your villain, they have sex, and they kill the villain, and that's it. And there really isn't much in between. I'm finding myself surprised that there's all these different other elements in different films that really differentiates it from other iterations of the film. And I guess that's how this film franchise has lasted so long, because they're able to mix up the formula so much in different movies. And I like that. I think that's great. I will say this, though. After I finished The Spy Who Loved Me, I was leaning to mission failure. There were elements of this that didn't work well. I think Moore's Bond is showing some cracks in it, especially when he needs to be deadly or intimidating. And I thought the villains were just incredibly lacking. And they were just too silly for me. But The action's well done, even though it's not original. And I think we've said it too. I love Barbara Bach in this film. I love Anya in this movie. And I think she is one of the best characters in a Bond film, period. I mean, we just had one of the best villains last week with The Man with the Golden Gun with Sacramanga. And now we have one of the best Bond girls in Anya in this. And I have the same problem. I just wish they were in a better movie. I just wish that they were in a much more interesting movie. Because of those elements are really good, I'm going to give it a pretty limp mission accomplished as well. I'll be honest, like, the only thing that really weighed my decision is how positive I am on Anya. I just love this character. She's probably one of the better characters of any Bond film. But that said, the silliness was a little overbearing for me, even though the action was good. Mission accomplished for me, zero mission accomplished for you?
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Mission accomplished for The Spy Who Loved Me. Now, if you want my full review on this movie, you can go to my website at imthewiz.com. You'll have my full written review right on the site, along with a link to the video that has this review that you've just listened to. All right, Zero. So for next week, we're going to go on to the next Moore film, which is what movie?
It is Moonraker from 1979, nice. And this one goes on a more sci-fi angle.
No kidding. Yeah, is this set in the moon? Like, I've never seen Moonraker, so.
No, I think it's set on, like, a satellite base that's heading towards the moon, I think.
Oh, okay.
It's been so long since I've seen this one.
Look, the most that I know from Moonraker is that in Jane and Silent Bob Strike Back, they made a joke at. That's it. That's all I know about Moonraker. So, I will be looking forward to this as usual. I gotta say, though, I am surprised I am liking so many of the Bond films. There are some I like more than others, but there is enough of a difference between all the iterations that they give you different things to like in each one, which I'm very surprised by, because I just kept thinking, oh, it's going to get stale at some point, it's going to get old at a certain angle, it's going to get really tiresome at a certain point, but it just hasn't. This has been entertaining so far, with maybe the exception of one movie.
Yeah, and I almost forgot that Moonraker goes back to the goofy Bond trend of giving Bond girls really goofy double entendre names.
Oh my god, this name.
Yeah, this one has Holly Goodhead.
Oh my god, yes, I am so in on this. Oh, I can't wait. So tune in next time where me and Zero review Moonraker. I am Intelligence Officer Wiz.
I'm Weapon Specialist Zero.
We'll talk to you guys next time. Bye.